Welcome to the Cultivated Being Podcast. We are two brothers. My name is Dr. Nick Hyde. This is my brother, Dr. Jake. Jake, say hi.
Hello, everybody.
We are here again for our weekly chat, going over life stuff and brother stuff and doctor stuff and health stuff. And we have a special guest with us today.
We do. I'll introduce her. Mm-hmm. So her name's Catherine Boris. She is local legend. She's my acupuncturist. She is an acupuncturist, Chinese herbalist, and a lot more other things, actually. So we'll get into that as we go. Catherine's kind of been a sponge and learned just about a little bit of everything when it comes to natural and alternative health. So Catherine, say hello.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you so much. Looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, we are too.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So, Catherine, normally we just kind of check in, talk about the week for a sec. Anything interesting, Nick? You learning anything?
Oh, man. The things I have learned this week. I mean, yeah, I learned lots of little things, but I actually, you know what? I started to do some house calls and I really enjoy it. I like long form working on people.
How long do they usually schedule you for?
An hour.
An hour? And like in your clinics, usually like 30 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be 15 to 20 minutes, but usually it ends up being 30 minutes. So, yeah.
That's pretty good. So you like, get to, is it more treatment or you do more like consulting or teaching or coaching?
Well, yeah, the first visit, you know, this with everybody, it's like we do our work on them and then the person comes up and they're either, I mean, usually they have a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the first time people have a lot of things they want to talk about and ask about, but no, I'll probably work on them for 45 minutes, maybe a little longer. I might give them an intensive where I do the one treatment, have them walk around for a little bit, do another one. It kind of depends on, you know, what they need, but it's been fun because I like the intensive stuff anyways. I like, for me clinically, I'm so interested with, if I only had one day with somebody, what would I do for them? You know, This is my only time to ever treat them, knowing everything I've ever learned, which maybe isn't that much, right? But everything that I've ever learned, what are the things I would do today? And
is that the topic for today's show? Because Catherine does house calls too, and I'd like to hear what she says about that. I would like to hear both of you think.
I would love to hear what she,
one day with somebody.
I would love to hear what you guys have to say about that. But I want to know more about Catherine, and obviously we haven't even asked Jake how he's doing this week, but
yeah, I'm fine. Let's hear about Catherine. You having a good week?
I'm having a wonderful week.
Learning
I've
anything?
Had a really busy week. So I'm not really focused on necessarily learning one thing this week. I have been learning several different things this week. I'm kind of delving a little bit more deeply into nutrigenomics and kind of working with some patients right now in studying working them up and looking at their single nucleotide variations and then custom tailoring dietary as well as lifestyle modification plans to their single nucleotide variation reports. And also then, depending on what comes up from their reports, going a little bit more deeply into functional testing, whether it be, you know, hormone metabolites in urine or inflammatory pathways and small particle lipoprotein testing and micronutrients, things like that. So I've had, I had one really great client this week who I got to put together a new action plan for him. So that was really fabulous.
That's fun.
And I have a 9-year-old actually I'm going to be seeing on Wednesday. And so I was kind of studying through his DNA report as well. So this week was kind of all about, like, on my back end after my clients this week, it was delving into that information. And it's really fascinating. A lot of the overlaps that come back in terms of really comes down to, whether it's a detoxification issue, inflammation issue, cardiovascular, metabolic issues, you know, and then optimizing, you know, optimizing the single nucleotide variations. There are no, there's not a positive or a negative. It's just whether or not the variation itself, you know, how to work with that variant, which is really also a beautiful idea.
Yeah. So. I think we have a lot of listeners who are not practitioners. What you're saying is amazing, but let's break it down for them. Someone's like, what is nutrigenomics and why would I need to do this? Why is this interesting? And how is it different from just normal blood labs for people?
Yeah. So there's a lot of variables there. So nutrigenomics is basically looking at what we've found out about the genome and testing our own genetic information. So our own DNA. And when we look at our DNA, we look at what actually comes back in terms of our sequencing and how that sequencing codes for perhaps an enzyme and how that enzyme then affects a biochemical reaction in the body that will affect our health in some capacity. So different than regular blood testing. Regular blood testing is going to look at like your comp metabolic, your CBC. Those are going to look at sort of your white blood cells, your red blood cells, your liver function, kidney function. Sometimes doctors will do a comprehensive thyroid, some vitamin D, things like that.
Just like
basics.
Just kind of endocrine basics. Panel, mm-hmm. Mineral check.
Yep, all that stuff. This is looking at
genes.
Yeah, this looks at like what we're actually, what's going on in terms of our, what's going on in terms of our underlying, like how we code for our metabolic processes and how each of us are different in that capacity.
So what's a common sequencing error that comes up, like a more common one?
So the one of the hot ones that's right on the market right now, the trendy one, trendy gene sequence that everyone's talking about is MTHFR, methyl tetrahydrofolate single nucleotide variation, which is a methylation SNP. And what that has, if someone has that, whether they're homozygous or heterozygous for that SNP, they might not process methyl groups effectively. And that can affect brain health. So it can affect mood. It can affect sleep. It can affect concentration. It can affect emotion. It can also adversely affect how we detoxify. So if we're, you know, if our body's under a large inflammatory burden and we're not detoxifying well, and we have that single nucleotide variation, we tend to become more toxic and more inflamed. So it can be a root cause problem for why someone's not clearing things out of their body effectively. And then it can also be a factor in immune system regulation. So that's another area that methylation shows up.
Yeah, methylation does a lot. So this is something our dad has. He's been tested for, and I think maybe our sister more.
I have it. I have it.
Yeah. I probably have it too.
I probably do too. So I a simple thing you can do, whether you have it or not, is just, for example, like take B vitamins, which is helpful, especially already methylated.
Yes. So when you're looking at a B vitamin supplement in the grocery store or Whole Foods or whatever your natural pharmacy is or with your doctor, making sure that your B12 source is a methylcobalamin versus a cyanocobalamin and your folate. This is very important. And a lot of women who are looking to get pregnant or who are pregnant look for a good quality folate, which is B9 methylated tetrahydrofolate.
Excellent
advice. So we used to use that. I mean, that was... Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is still something you can do, but in order for parents to not vaccinate their children in California, one of the go-to ways was to test for MTHFR, because then they could get exemption because it shows that they have in their genes an issue with probably how they react to vaccines. So you can get a medical exemption for vaccines. I don't know if you can do that anymore in California with the recent laws that's been passed, but I know that's what everyone was doing for a little bit because it's so common that people have this methylation issue.
Now, is it more common in certain like types of people, is like regionally this, as they studied that at all? Like people that are Anglo descent are more likely, or?
I don't know the answer to that. That would be interesting to know. There's a lot of different genes that play a role in methylation, not just the MTHFR, but that is the most common one.
That's the hot one.
That's the hot one in topic right now. Yes. Another really good one that I've been finding that goes across the board is something called COMT, which is a coenzyme methyltransferase single nucleotide variation. And that one also impacts the brain a lot. And so mood, energy, and also just how we process. And that's an easy fix with magnesium. So magnesium affects a COMT single nucleotide variation. And magnesium is one of the minerals that's most efficient in our population. So a magnesium supplement is also very helpful for a lot of people, especially the cognitive things.
Would you just say blanket statement, like you should be supplementing with magnesium?
I would blanket statement that every single human being should take magnesium. It's a vital nutrient for so many different processes in the body. And so many of the things that we do in our daily lives, including just having a stress response, drinking coffee, drinking alcohol, working out, these deplete our magnesium stores.
Just being stressed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So magnesium's a good go-to.
Yeah. As far as we know, magnesium's a necessary mineral for over 250 chemical reactions our body does, which means probably a lot more than that. And it's just not really sufficient in our soil anymore, so it's not in our food. We used to get plenty of magnesium just by eating vegetables and even eating animals that eat vegetables. But it's just, I think it's safe to say most Americans are deficient if they're not supplementing.
Yes.
Which that is such an interesting thing to think about. When the earth depletes, we deplete, you know, it's like it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But,
and also conversely, I tell people, generally things that are good for the earth are also good for us. It's the same like practices or lifestyle disciplines.
Yeah. I encourage all of my patients, food first, you know, I mean that age old adage, food is your medicine. Food is our medicine. Like Jake said, the problem is that our food is not nutrient rich any longer. And even the animals, they're not even being fed their native diets, you know? And so you are what you eat eats is a common saying that we hear a lot these days. So you have to look at what the food is absorbing, whether it's vegetables, what they're absorbing from the soil, or whether it's, you know, animals and what they're, you know, eating and digesting as well.
Absolutely. And if your animals are eating moldy toxic foods, which they can if they're living off largely grains, guess who's eating that moldy toxic food secondhand?
And same thing, like if the animal has been treated with antibiotics, that antibiotic gets into our bloodstream and can adversely affect our microbiome, which is our, you know, indigenous sort of terrain, bacterial terrain that we have within our own bodies as well. And so that can be an adverse effect from eating livestock that's been treated with antibiotics.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, I like to think about it in really simple terms. If, you know, you saw a roadkill on the side of the road, you would be like, I'm not eating that. That's disgusting, right? It's probably full of diseases and all other kinds of stuff. Well, that happens in actually a lot of the ways we get our food. These animals are diseased. They have all kinds of issues. So obviously there's always a better source. And for a lot of people, like, I don't think I'm financially there to get a better source. But you know what? You know, you can fact even a little bit goes a long way. Just like start trying to make one decision where you could help improve your diet, getting better quality meats for you. Especially, I mean, we're talking about that with animals, so better quality meats.
For me, it's like the splurge on the eggs. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge investment. If you get the eggs that are like $6 for 12 versus $2 for 12, like end of the day.
Yeah, you're not going to be eating that many
but
eggs
huge
per
difference.
Week. But yeah, the nutrients are so different. And the benefits of eating good quality eggs are much better.
Yeah. That's the bang for your buck.
Food Absolutely. Upgrade. Absolutely. And full of all the amino acids that you need right there. And you also get choline, tons of choline from the yolk, which is fantastic for your brain.
Well,
You get some sulfuric compounds, which are useful. You get, if it's the high quality eggs, you get actually good omega-3 content, which is vital for brain function, cell wall function. You get the goods.
Yeah. Bang for your buck.
Yeah. It's just a good investment. That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah, my almost now sister-in-law, she's marrying my brother-in-law. She her family was talking about in the Great Depression, their family had chickens going into the Great Depression, and they had like a bunch of eggs, and they would feed people up and down the street, giving them eggs. And like, it got through the whole, their neighborhood. It helped them get through the Great Depression. It's a really cool story, but I mean, that just goes to show how, you know, financially feasible it is to upgrade your eggs and get everything you need out of that. So,
yeah, and always check your local farmers markets and your local farms. So a lot of times we get so busy in our day-to-day, we get so used to just going to the grocery store, the closest market, things like that. But if we really take the due diligence and the time, we are able to, you know, create time sometimes if we take the time to create our time. So if we create the time to source our produce or our eggs or something like that from something local, it could actually turn out to be less expensive. And I don't know if you guys have thrown out there in recent pods, but the Environmental Working Group, I don't know if you're familiar with them, EWG.org, they have a great resource on their website where they list like the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen, which is basically like if you're going to buy organic and non-GMO, what your which ones are the more positive things to look for when you need to buy organic that are going to be more heavily laden with, you know, the toxins and pesticides and things of that nature, herbicides. So that's a great resource.
That's awesome. We may put that in the show notes.
Definitely.
I like to think, I mean, you should, if you can get organic fruits and vegetables, it's really important. But if you can't get exclusively that, I would say like things that actually grow and come to shape in the soil would be the priority.
And seasonally.
Yeah.
But seasonal is really important.
Seasonal is important. Now, you live in California. We live in Florida. So we just have great seasons all the time when we can get local produce really easily. But not everybody does.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, yeah, if your food grows in soil, like some grow on like branches, some grow on vines, it's all important. But if it's like...
like a root vegetable.
Yeah, like a root vegetable. It's living in the soil. That's definitely upgrade to organic for those.
Yeah. Or the leafy greens, man.
Yes, the leafy greens and the berries.
It's like all you're getting from those things is like immediately what was in the soil is the greens. It's basically why you want to eat like kale is because of the minerals and stuff it just got from the soil.
Exactly.
Can we talk about this? Because I don't know if we have. Like the biggest, there's a lot of reasons why you should eat organic, but we were talked about glyphosate.
Glyphosate.
I think we probably have mentioned it, but I don't think we've really gotten into it.
Glyphosate.
If we have, it's worth a review.
This is a good review.
So this is the most important reason why to go organic, or the biggest argument to be made. So glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup.
Monsanto's product. It's a weed killer pesticide.
Yep. So it's an everything aside, actually. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it does kill weeds and it does kill bugs, it kills fungus, it kills birds.
It was invented actually to be utilized as an antibiotic.
There you go. So antibio, that's life. Anyway, it's essentially super effective at killing everything. And the reason there's genetically modified plants, or the reason I'd say the main reason you should look for non-GMO, it's not because necessarily genetically modifying food's bad for food. Like we've done it in certain ways for thousands of years. It's because the genetically modified foods we grow are to be resistant to Roundup, or Roundup ready, as it's called. So if it is genetically modified, it's very likely doused with Roundup, which is to say glyphosate, which is, like I said, it kills everything for the most part, including, well, it won't kill big, dumb animals like us, but...
Well, it actually does. It actually ends up killing big, dumb animals like us, because what it actually does is it comes into our system and it destroys our microbiome. It wreaks havoc on our microbiome because it is an antibiotic. So in doing so, it kills the bacteria that we need to communicate with the food that we're bringing in, our proteins to our immune system, so that we can properly digest, absorb, and assimilate those nutrients. And because it creates that dysbiosis in our guts, it does play a role actually in creating leaky gut, and plays a huge problem with brain-based disorders. So there's a lot of research that's been out there that glyphosate poisoning, which can be found actually in the umbilical cord sometimes of pregnant mothers, mimics autism. And so they're actually linking some toxic levels of glyphosate with brain, brain-based developmental problems. So it's a huge, huge, huge issue that people need to become aware of and be more mindful of, not using it in their homes, in their own gardens, but then also when they're an advocate with a dollar at the markets, what they purchase.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say, it doesn't kill us directly. It just makes us sick and weak.
Makes us sick and weak and prone to disease that could kill us for sure.
Yeah. So why does the government allow our foods to be sprayed with this stuff? It's because, well, like I said, it's non-toxic at certain levels. The interesting thing about things that are generally safe for consumption, is that what the term that they use? It's like generally safe for consumption. I think that's what it is. It's because it's, for the most part, they just test these things in isolation. So they'll test on lab rats first, and I don't know exactly how they say things are generally safe for humans. But the point is they're tested in isolation, and I haven't met a human that gets exposed to toxins in isolation. I've seen studies where typical human in your normal day gets exposed to upwards of 150 or more toxins just in your daily life. So it's not necessarily about just getting rid of glyphosate in your life, but it's the synergistic effect of multiple toxins interacting and overall toxic burden. And then you combine it with things like we talked about with genetic variances and mutations, where you become less effective when it comes to clearing toxins, and then you can get all kinds of issues from there.
True.
Very good summary of the rainfall down, trickle down.
Mm-hmm. And there's more that could be said, you know, talking about like the half-life of Roundup, it's like longer than you'd expect. And then also the actual mechanism of how Roundup kills things, I think, is probably also important, but I'm not an expert in it. I haven't.
Oh, I thought you were about to take us to school.
I know, to another level.
I'm not an expert, but I'm just asking the questions people need to think about this stuff on this or other stuff. It's like, well, okay, kill stuff, but how does it do it? That's all important. I think it does some kind of, chelating kind of thing that, I have to look into it again.
Fascinating, Nick. So foods that help you, because you're going to get exposed to glyphosate, it's really hard unless you like live on an island where you get to control all the agriculture. It gets
complicated
into groundwater. It's kind of can be everywhere. So
foods that help us detoxify. You want to talk about those?
Yeah.
All right. So our body goes through different pathways of detoxification. The typical pathways that we just usually touch on, because there are more than just these, but phase one, phase two, and phase three detoxification. So to get a toxin out of the body, you have to get the toxin out of the cell, which makes it an intermediate. It goes out of the cell into the bloodstream. Then from there, it needs to become water soluble and excreted from the body. These pathways, there are many, but one is sulforaphation, one is glucuronidation, one is methylation, which we already talked about, one is acetylation. So when we think about foods that are wonderful detoxifiers, we look to the cruciferous vegetables as well as the allium family of vegetables. Cruciferous vegetables include things like cauliflower, broccoli, like things like bok choy, arugula, Brussels sprouts, sunchokes, Jerusalem artichokes, which are also fabulous prebiotics. Jerusalem artichokes and sunchokes are wonderful prebiotics. They feed your microbiome. And then the allium vegetables like shallots and onions and garlic are also wonderful detoxifiers and help support us through detoxification. So broccoli sprouts are actually the number one source of sulforaphane. So they are taking broccoli sprouts now, and a lot of the nutraceutical companies are extracting the glucuronaphane out of broccoli sprouts. So a broccoli sprout, I don't exactly know the statistic. I'm not a numbers girl, but I know that they are the number one food that helps us detoxify. So a little bit of that in your wrap, on your salad, even in your smoothie is fantastic for you.
I will say, with sulfur in all kinds of foods, so that's one of the detox ways we were talking about here. But some people have a sensitivity to sulfur. If you're the person who you're like, I don't really like garlic or onion, I don't want to taste too much onion, there might be a chance that you are actually sensitive to the sulfur in certain types of foods. So in that case, that's maybe not your best route, but you'd probably be the one person who's avoiding it anyways. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what tends to happen because there's intelligence there, you know? So in that case, we talked about all these other, foods, these other options that you have. What would be, you know, if you're at home on the weekend, you're like, I'm going to do something nice right now to help detox myself from whatever, I'm going to make some food. What would you do?
Like in terms of like a meal or in terms of, I mean, there are a lot of things. I mean, I would say, well, it's just a day in the life of detox, right? So I would probably actually wake up if you can tolerate, again, everyone is different. This is why, you know, in functional medicine, Chinese medicine, personalized medicine, every single human being is different. So there's never a one size fits all approach. So let's caveat that again, whether it's a sulfur issue or, I was just going to say apple cider vinegar. So there could be some hydrochloric acid issues or things that you might, you know, knuckle up against here. But for a lot of people, starting out the day with a little bit of apple cider vinegar and lemon water can be a really good way to alkalize and optimize the stomach acid. I also like activated charcoal as a really good addition to draw out toxins. So I like to make sometimes an activated charcoal lemonade, which is really, really yummy. Just like squeeze some lemons, throw some activated charcoal in there. I don't mind not having it sweet, but if you have a sweet tooth, some Manuka honey is a really good add into that. Then depending on what you're trying to clear, other wonderful things, like if you're going to do a green juice, you could do say like a celery cucumber juice sans skin, and add a little bit of cilantro. Cilantro is a wonderful chelating agent. Cilantro helps to clear heavy metals out of the body. So that would be a really good foundation for a juice. Lemons and limes obviously are fantastic to add into that, and ginger for digestive ability. And then I always go cruciferous. So I like broccoli. I love cauliflower. You know, I'm a big Brussels sprout girl. So you could do a huge roasted root vegetable kind of platter, something like that. If you
getting hungry,
if you're pescatarian or you eat meat, I mean, usually on detox days, I'd say eliminate animal proteins altogether. A great salad, all the bitters are really great. So radicchio, arugula, endive, all the bitter vegetables or lettuces are very, very good as well. Radishes are a really great detoxifier, really good for the liver. I'm wondering if there's even something we could do for detox dessert, like coconut, cacao, something with really good fats.
High quality fats. There's probably something.
You know, honestly, I'm gonna break down this data. Instagram worthy though. I mean, just because we all love food here. I think charcoal in a dessert is so Instagram worthy. Charcoal in general, it's like. Man, it looks so cool. Yes, you can make a coconut ice cream. Sounds awesome.
Catherine just set up a pretty nice day of detoxing. I want to break it down into parts. So starting out your day to alkalize, so getting really rudimentary, there's acidity and there's alkalinity, and they balance each other out. Your body's designed to be alkaline, but a lot of things we do make it more acidic, and then your body's got to like adapt to that and deal with it, which is a burden on the body. So you want to alkalize your body when you can. People ask me sometimes like, isn't lemon juice acidic? And I'm like, well, it is, but why is it not acidic for your body?
Because of the way that it actually breaks and interacts with the hydrochloric acid in your stomach.
Exactly. So it's acid going in, but mm-hmm. there's chemical reactions that happen in your body, and the net result when it's metabolically broken down is alkaline. So lemon juice, while it is acidic, typically a pH of like 5 on the scale, alkalizes you, which is pretty cool. Blood. Mm-hmm. Okay. Activated charcoal. We have mentioned this on the show before, but maybe people don't remember, or this is a new listener. What's activated charcoal do? Why is it so magical?
Activated charcoal binds to toxins and actually is able to pull the toxins out of the bloodstream. So again, once a toxin is released from the cell and it enters the bloodstream, it becomes an inflammatory mediator. And so from that place, we actually need to get it out of the body. So this is actually where the genetics come into. Sometimes people are very poor phase two detoxifiers. Activated charcoal can bind to that toxin and it facilitate excretion.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Which is so cool. One note we want to make with that is because with activated charcoal, it's kind of like, you know, if I think of a cartoon version of the biochemistry, it has like a, I'm not on the screen, it has like an open hand and it's ready to like grab hands with the toxin and then they go out together, right? So they'll go be eliminated from the system together. This is
you make it sound so playful and romantic.
Everything is in my brain. That's how it is. So we've talked about how maybe you don't want to have activated charcoal when you have all of your supplements and goodies. You don't want to combine them all together.
You don't want to pull your supplements out of the body. Right. Activated charcoal wants to be taken on an empty stomach, preferably at least 3, if not 4 hours away from food, meals, supplements, things of that nature. Yes. You want to pull the bad stuff out, keep the good stuff in.
So, I know people that are more, concerned about eating out because when you eat out, you can't really control what's in your food. A lot of restaurants, you might be ordering something that's healthy, but there's hidden things in there like canola oil, hidden sugars, things like that, toxins, non-organic things. And so they'll pop a couple pills of activated charcoal. You get them in capsule form. You can just get it powder form. It comes in a lot of forms. And they'll just take a couple capsules just right before they go out to eat just because it's like, yeah, there's going to be nutrients in this food, but there's going to be anti-nutrients as well. And I don't really take it to that level, but sometimes I do. Like if I'm going out with friends for like pizza and beer, I'm definitely taking a couple activated charcoal before.
See, and I'll take some milk thistle and acetylcysteine, some selenium.
We're going to get into that. We're going to get into that because that's supplementation for detoxing.
Yep, it's different.
Because I do want to talk about that because that's really important.
Finish breaking down the day.
Yeah, so Manuka honey is the next thing I think you mentioned, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Raw honey, great. Although, technically, it's just fructose, which isn't a super great sugar for us. But what makes Manuka honey so special?
Manuka honey is chock full of a lot of vitamins and minerals, as well as being wonderful for our immune systems. So Manuka honey has different chemicals in it that help to balance out our immune systems, especially if it's cultivated locally.
But Catherine, why is it so expensive?
I know, seriously.
I can't give you the answer to that other than, you know, how it's produced, the bees, and where it's cultivated.
These bees get massaged daily.
Foie gras honey.
It is.
Yeah. Bees are so cool. Am I right?
Bees are essential.
They are so cool.
They're essential to our environment.
If you don't know how cool bees are, just watch the Bee Movie.
Oh,
Jerry Seinfeld teaches you everything you need to know.
If you know anyone that can have bees on their property, let them have bees on their property. Bees are vital for populating our world. Yeah.
Did you know?
Well, I also have a
business of lending out bees. So people like ship bees to pollinate orchards and then they like
bring them
recollect
back.
Them back. Yeah, it's a super interesting business.
No, this is cool, man. Okay, so one of my closest friends, you know, we're in Berry land out here. One of my closest friends
California.
Is an exec at Driscoll's. And so he's operating, he's overseeing a bunch of different, you know, like, I don't know, thousands of acres of berry stuff. And they just got these two guys who have some bees on their payroll now, right? They had them experiment on a couple of their fields, a couple of their farms. And in 1 year, the bees had them produce 25% more berries.
That's awesome.
Right? 25% more berries. And you didn't have to pay the bees at all, right? So it's just like, he's like, it's blowing my mind. So yeah, these guys, there's just two guys, they just manage bees and they all have them go to the different farms.
And when you're Driscoll, that's 25% so cool. is a lot.
Yeah.
Driscoll owns the berry industry.
Yeah, they are the berries
they are.
That we eat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Driscoll doesn't, I don't know if they have any of their own farms. They just buy berries from individuals' farms. But
actually,
they partner with them to help increase, you know, profits and all that kind of stuff. So
cool.
That was not an ad for Driscoll's. I wish
that was
that was not an ad for Driscoll's. Although I'm going to go knock on the door after this and see what they will give me for it, but
it's worth asking.
Yeah. But yeah, bees are awesome.
Cilantro.
Chelator. What's chelation?
So chelation is the process by which we basically can remove a metal. So this goes back to kind of like the periodic table of elements. But you need to be able to bind an opposite in order to remove it out of a cell or out of a nutrient or out of a tissue. So when things are stuck in tissues, we need to be able to actually bind to them and pull them out. Actually, your example is perfect here. It's almost like this hook and key, or lock and key, in which we can pull these things out.
So, or two molecules holding hands.
Two molecules skipping holding along, hands, yes.
Going on a nice date.
Out of your body. No. Yeah,
going out.
Going out.
They're yes. going out for the night, not planning on coming back.
So cilantro is one of, chlorophyll and cilantro are two wonderful chelators. But cilantro.
Well, coriander is cilantro.
The seed of cilantro, leaf.
Yeah, so yes. In the United States, because we actually have listeners abroad. So cilantro is coriander. Every other country that speaks English calls cilantro coriander. Mm. We call it cilantro, but the seed of that plant we call coriander. So it's the same plant. There's a seed which is delicious in food.
Oh, yeah.
And there's cilantro, which is delicious in food, unless you have that weird gene that makes cilantro taste like soap. And then everything tastes like soap if it has cilantro in it.
So then you want to encapsulate it.
Yeah. And I feel sorry for you.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Cilantro tasty, is good.
Tastier.
Yeah.
But yes, like menus should actually have that warning, because I know like not a menus now, or at least in like big cities, will be like, you know, there's like a little sticker for dairy. Be like, this has dairy in it. This has gluten in it. This has soy. This has eggs, nuts. Your food might taste like soap. You should just have a soap bar for the people that are like
soapy suds on it.
Yeah, just for those, the few people. I don't even know the stats, but I know it's a pretty common thing where you.
So here's a caveat though to chelation. So we're talking about cilantro as a natural chelating agent. A lot of, or not, I shouldn't say a lot, but there are different doctors and things that will do IV chelation, and that can actually make people very sick if they're a poor phase 2 detoxifier. So chelation isn't something that you want to just kind of jump into without knowing how your body's able to process and excrete things. So that's why a food-based form or an herbal-based form is a little bit more gentle in the beginning. You may need the heavy guns or the big guns, what I like to call some of the more strong or invasive techniques. But just be very mindful as you undergo chelation, whether it is natural and herbal or it is, you know, something like an IV. Chelation, because it can redeposit toxins in the brain. It can redeposit toxins in other areas of the body. So you want to make sure that your pathways of excretion are open, functioning properly. Infrared saunas are great to help that. Make sure your bowel movements are happening.
And if you're doing those types of chelation therapies, it's a good thing to take activated charcoal, because if you're pulling things out of tissue, you might
get them out of your body.
You might sweat it out.
Yep,
but it might just get from your cells into your bloodstream, and from your bloodstream into your liver and gallbladder, back into your GI tract. So if you're detoxing, and even if you're like losing weight quickly, activated charcoal is another good thing to take, because when you're losing weight quickly, a lot of toxins are stored in your fat cells. So you might be like toxifying yourself if you're losing a lot of weight.
We had a professor. 100%. We had a professor in my grad school who, he was losing a bunch of weight, and he used to have a big addiction problem to all kinds of drugs. And he actually had some issues where he'd be teaching in the middle of class and all of a sudden he'd go on a trip. It was like not super that's professional, really, but that is reality.
Happening.
That is reality.
Yeah, it's possible. So, I was at a conference and we were discussing actually this doctor who was an alcoholic for a long period of time, heavy alcoholic. And he was undergoing detoxification, and he had to report and blow, and his ABV was elevated. And he's like, I really have been sober. And it's like all of this detoxification was actually pulling the ethanol out of his system. It was in his bloodstream.
Dang.
So yeah, mindfulness around those things. Detoxification is not something that you want to you know, we throw the word around, but it is something metabolically that we need. And it's also something that you don't want to take lightly. And if you are going to detoxify, make sure that you are moving, but also resting. A lot of people underestimate the necessity and power and benefits of sleep, meditation. Detoxing can be emotional, you know, and we're shifting things. And when we shift things on a metabolic level, when we shift things on an energetic and physical level, we shift things on sometimes a spiritual and emotional level as well. So detoxification is something that should be done mindfully, with caution, and ideally under the care of a medical professional.
Yeah. Now, detoxing is something that everyone who's listening to this is doing right now. Like, your body is a giant detoxing machine, right? So I've heard the argument by like doctors that say like, you don't need to do anything to detox. Detoxes are dumb. Your body detoxes everything. And that's a true statement historically, like our bodies detox, but no human being has ever been exposed to as many toxins as this generation's being exposed to. I'm talking like Industrial Revolution. Like, exactly. There was a lot of toxins then too, but like it's more now.
And it's in our air, it's in our water.
We need all the help we can get. So you can supplement. You mentioned things like, maybe I'm just remembering, milk thistle, dandelion root, selenium. Mm-hmm. Do I remember those correctly?
You do, yes.
Okay. So we can supplement. And so there's like liver support out there that I think is a good place to start. It's kind of like magnesium. I think we all should be supplementing our liver or just giving it a helping hand. And there's really good compounds that are, this is not up for debate. We know they dramatically help the liver do its job. Milk thistle being probably number one.
Yes. Just be careful if you have a ragweed allergy. Milk thistle's in the ragweed family. I have high dosed that with one patient and learned that very quickly.
That's how you learn, unfortunately. Highs. Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes. So we were like, what is going on? And we were like looking through all of her supplements, and finally it clicked. She was getting milk thistle and a couple different nutrients, and she had a ragweed allergy, and it wasn't that threatening, but she was uncomfortable. So that's a good caveat.
And milk thistle can give people an upset tummy. Not bad, but it can. So
yeah,
just be mindful of that.
Yeah, go on.
But it's incredibly good for the liver.
It's very good for the liver.
You can and get it in your
and
system.
And also a lot of people ask me too about like juice cleanses, and even things like the Master Cleanse, which I've done both of them many times. But detoxification actually requires a lot of amino acids. So if you're not getting certain amino acids, and there's a whole slew of them, you can't effectively detoxify. So while juice cleanses feel great, if you get those headaches, you're getting energy slumps, you're getting muscle pain, cramping, that means that your toxic intermediaries are in your blood and they're not being excreted. And you're usually an amino acid deficiency. So medical detoxification is usually a more gentle approach.
Any particular amino acids?
Glutamine is a really, really important one. I
will say, while you're on this topic, maybe you could think of some other amino acids. I see a lot of the multi-level marketing kinds of supplements that I'll look at. A lot of people will come in with this whole basket of supplements when they come into me, and they're like, are any of these good? Should I be taking these? And I love having those conversations because it's really fun. But
I do too. I unpack people's baskets.
Yeah, totally.
I encourage people, bring them in.
And yeah, because people hear that detoxes, you know, they kind of suck, man. They don't feel very good. But when a lot of these multi-level marketing things, they don't have enough of the good stuff to actually help you excrete. And so it's like, oh, I feel crappy, therefore the detox must be working. It's like, no, man, you're just pushing toxin from one area to the bottom. Yeah,
exactly. You're
recirculating.
You gotta get them out of the body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hot tip, Nick. Way to bring that up.
You know, honestly, my favorite detox thing, my absolute favorite.
Oh, give us the goods.
Glutathione, man.
Glutathione is fabulous. It is fabulous. With vitamin C, glutathione is your number one antioxidant.
Yeah. So, okay. The caveat with this too, because it is your number one antioxidant.
we should do a little thing on antioxidants. So oxidative stress creates tons of inflammation. Cancer leads to a lot of problems. Like oxidative stress is just basically like unbonded oxygen, just like wreaking havoc in your body because it wants to bond with everything. So an antioxidant is something that will bind with it and it'll just deal with that issue. Vitamin C is great. One of the reasons vitamin C is so great is because your body can convert it to glutathione, which is your number one antioxidant. Now, it's hard to supplement with glutathione because it's a delicate
molecule.
Very delicate. There's liposomal forms, which are bound to a molecule that helps get you through your digestive system. So if you're supplementing orally, that's what you got to do. I've done IV glutathione, which was quite an experience. I used to do it somewhat regularly. If you really need antioxidant help, I recommend IV, but you can take some oral forms, but make sure it's...
Yeah.
And glutathione is the only antioxidant that doesn't create another oxidant. All other antioxidants create another oxidant with in the process of neutralizing, and glutathione is the only one that doesn't. Actually, cordyceps, as well as Ganoderma, are two mushrooms, and those two mushrooms upregulate our glutathione recycling stores.
That's awesome. I will say I usually take as my supplement, I take a glutathione recycler.
Yes.
That's
Selenium, milk thistle.
Yeah.
Right? Do you use Apex Energetics? We're not going to plug.
I do use Apex Energetics.
Knock on their door.
Go knock on Apex's door.
I love Apex.
So I'll use AC glutathione with glutathione recycler as well for some patients, or Apex's trisomal glutathione with their glutathione recycler.
So we're plugging things we take. So I take a liver support that has milk thistle, selenium, dandelion root, and licorice root. Mm. We haven't mentioned licorice yet. Mm-hmm. But basically does the same things, the other things we're talking about. And the reason being is, you know, your liver is a super like hardy organ. It's pretty tough, but we're testing it like we've never tested the human body before. And so any help you can get with the primary organ that helps you deal with toxins, not to mention like make hormones and like methylate compounds. Mm-hmm. And like the liver does so much for us. Like just help it out.
Love your liver.
Give it a boost.
Yes. I would really like to, because I'm looking at the clock here and I know at one point everyone's going to look and be like, I got to go do something. I want to talk about acupuncture.
Oh, okay.
We haven't really hit that topic on the show very much. So people are a little bit nervous about acupuncture as they're nervous about doing anything in the health world, you know?
Yes. I love acupuncture newbies. Do you have a specific question in mind or just kind of dive in?
I would say like, what's the aim of acupuncture? Now it's like broad, that gives you a lot of leeway to talk about things. But like before I started treatment with someone, I'm like, here's the goal of today. We're going to, this is what we're going to try and accomplish. And so you can say there's, you know, depending on the person who comes in, there could be different aims, but like generally speaking, like what are you trying to accomplish?
I mean, acupuncture, ultimately we're trying to bring the body into homeostasis, because when the body is in an environment of homeostasis, it can heal itself. So acupuncture is a self-regulating modality. It goes into a lot of other capacities. So one of the most beautiful things when I first started studying acupuncture theory and not acupuncture itself, was sort of this concept that we have is that each individual human body is a microsystem. It's a micro universe, and we are a microcosm to the universe's macrocosm. And so in our universe, we need to create our own homeostatic environment, but there's a dynamic balance. There's a living balance in our own body. So, you know, when we perform acupuncture, sometimes we're trying to unblock a stagnant area. So I use the analogy sometimes like if you're in your garden, you're trying to water your plant and your hose is kinked and, you know, water is spewing out from the spigot. You can't actually get water to your plant. That's kind of the same thing. We're trying to get energy to flow, say, to the stomach organ or to the liver organ or, you know, to the brain. But there's actually something that happened there, whether it's from trauma, from infection, from an emotional upset, from long-standing chronic imbalances from the way that we're living or what we're eating or what we're thinking. You know, all of these things can create these imbalances. So in acupuncture, we're basically trying to unkink that hose at an acupuncture point, resolve flow so that communication and feedback can occur properly. So a lot of the things in the human body work on communicatory as well as feedback mechanisms. And so acupuncture upregulates the body's own ability to have its own internal communicative dialogue, which is beautiful. And in that space, also, the body goes into a parasympathetic nervous system state in acupuncture. So anything that is inflammatory based, which stress is an inflammatory trigger. Yeah.
Talk about what parasympathetic nervous system
is. Parasympathetic nervous system is part of our central nervous system. It's our rest and restore. It's a part of our nervous system.
Healing and regulation.
Yep, that digests, that where our immune system functions the best. It's the opposite of our sympathetic, which is our fight or flight, our stress response, the inflammatory part of the nervous system. So when we do acupuncture, we go into that healing regulatory state. So the immunity gets balanced, hormones get balanced, emotions can calm down. We can really
full use of your brain.
Yeah, we can breathe and we can heal on a much, much, much deeper level. So we say acupuncture is that energetic regulatory system that balances everything else that we're doing in our lifestyle, our food, our relationships, you know, our jobs.
It's all the long-term survival stuff.
Sympathetic or the parasympathetic?
Parasympathetic.
So the way I teach it, Nick and I talk about fight or flight a lot on this because our specialty as chiropractors actually. Yep. Like fight or flight, short-term survival. It's like whatever it takes to survive this second, I'll do it. Doesn't matter the cost. I want to live this from moment. The second. So we develop this as humans, like running from, you know, predators and other humans. And our stress response has changed. I mean, our response is the same, but our stressors have changed. We are not running from tigers. We have like work stress, relationship stress, money stress, health stress, social media stress, all kinds of things, right?
Lots of low grade constant stresses.
But we haven't like evolved for like gradients of a stress response. It's just all, it's binary. It's a switch. And the problem, so conversely, so we have short-term survival, and then I compare it to long-term survival. So parasympathetic is long-term survival. Mm. It's longevity, it's health, it's regulation. Mm-hmm. So we're only ever in short-term survival, which you could say is stress, or long-term survival, which you can say is health.
Longevity and stress, yes.
And so you're either in stress or you're in health. You're never in both because it's two different functions, like moving energy towards different systems. And
you know, it's like reverse or drive. You can't.
Neutral.
I tell people it's like, because modern cars, a lot of cars now have like sport mode and comfort mode. And sport mode's fun. And it could be useful if you're like needing to like, I don't know, do something fun, whatever. It's not that useful. But you can have sport mode and it's kind of fun. And it can be necessary maybe if you're trying to overtake someone on the freeway or something. I don't know. Or race someone off a light. I don't know what people do. I don't even have a car anymore. But but if you're in sport mode all the time, first of all, your like fuel economy goes way down, so your energy expenditure goes way up, and you're going to put an extra strain on your suspension and your steering and your tires and your transmission and your gearbox and all that. And that's kind of like us. Like, we should be in comfort mode most of the time.
Most of the time, yes.
And every now and then, we should engage like our sport mode or our stress response
because
it actually is healthy for us. Yes. And like a really good exercise, you should be in fight or flight, and that's healthy. But we shouldn't live in fight or flight. That's going to absolutely lead to exhaustion of one or more systems in your body, which leads to symptomology and disease. So
yes,
because there's the classic four stages of stress. Which now that I brought it up, you know, I don't actually remember them very well. But the first one's alarm, and the last one's exhaustion. So
yeah,
no, the last one's death. The third one's exhaustion, I think.
And the second one is
fatigue. I don't remember.
So you can have hypercortisol secretion, which we're producing too much cortisol. And then after long periods of time, you can go into your hypocortisol secretion. And that's usually when you start to experience that burnout. That's when you just, you can't even get your sympathetic revved up anymore because you've just drained yourself so much. So acupuncture is a really great modality to help you rebalance that. So though is meditation and yoga and Qigong and some of these other methodologies that allow us to tap into our parasympathetics and really, really inner regulate our own being. So you don't always need to seek out. I mean, I'm an acupuncturist, so I would love to have you see an acupuncturist. But there are things that we can also do on our own terms to tap into our parasympathetic nervous system state. Meditation is one of those things. I'm a very firm advocate and believer and practicer of meditation and yoga. So
I do want to, I think this is so cool. I want to go into this topic quite a bit, but I'm just thinking about our listener here for a second. And I was thinking, you know, a lot of people are waiting, you know, they're in this, they're in the fight or flight. They're in one of these stages before death and they're waiting for someone to like come and save them. Mm. And I mean, that's like, that's what people, they're like, I passed the alarm point. Yeah, I'm past the alarm point. Yeah, you have to have some autonomy about this. You can't wait around. You have to do something. That's why I love what you're saying, right? Sometimes I feel like, you know, people are so stalled, and I've been there. It's like I feel like I can't even do what I need to do. I had a patient who used to come in. He would say, I need to get in shape in order to get shape. Like he's not even ready to, you know, work out and take his own autonomy and do make these decisions on his own. He was just so run down, right? And sometimes in those cases, it's like you need to go in to see somebody.
Yeah, you do. And I use this analogy with a lot of my patients, like you were saying, like he needs to exercise in order to be able to exercise. So I talk with a lot of my clients about high intensity interval training, high intensity, right? So what's high intensity for one person's not high intensity for another. So high intensity for a person who's in a wheelchair, let's say, in their mid-70s, might be like, and like working on PT, working on getting like their function of their legs back, might just be standing up and sitting down 3 times a day. Okay. That's okay. That's okay. Let's maximize and work on that. What's high intensity for someone who's burned out might just be getting out of bed, you know, making some chamomile tea and doing 10 minutes of meditation. I mean, those are extreme cases, right? And this is where, as a healthcare provider, as well as a yoga person, compassion is really important in terms of speaking with people on their terms. You know, where are you at? Let's really evaluate where you're at. We don't want to have unrealistic expectations, and we want to bring your body, like you bring a plant back from, you know, wilting and yellowing and discoloring. We want to bring you back to health. So how are we going to do that as gently, as effectively, and as quickly, but sometimes it's going to take some time as possible. And that's why we want to look at all of the different variations or variants and different contributing factors that are going on in each individual human being.
Excellently put.
Something to think about on top of that is like, why meditation, why yoga, why Qigong, why journaling? It's like really part of that goal is to become more present time conscious. Like if you're living in this moment that you're actually living in, like that super rarely calls for stress, calls for fight or flight. Like you're not in danger. What happens is our minds kind of operate in past experience and drives us out of this present need. So all these practices, and it could be prayer, it could be singing for some people, it could, you know, there's a lot of different ways people can become just more present into this moment. Mm-hmm. And it's in that moment where your body goes, oh, everything's okay. Mm-hmm. And I can heal right now. I can rest. So these are just resting practices.
Using the breath is really, really, really important. Connecting with the breath.
Yeah, breath tells your subconscious mind, like, I'm either not safe or I am safe. You slow your breath down, you make your breath intentional, your subconscious mind says, we can't be running from tigers right now. I wouldn't be breathing this way. And it's a good way to get your body more present, because that's what you want. If you're living in present time need, like present physiology, your body's going to heal. So all these modalities is trying to just update you from like some past trauma, some past stress, you know, these repetitive thoughts, mm-hmm. into like what do you need right now? And if you're living presently, your body self-regulates, or you could say it like self-corrects in real time, troubleshoots.
Mm, love that.
So that's the goal. We're just trying to get updated to right now.
Well, and that's why it's a dynamic balance, right? Because we are constantly being bombarded from the external world as well as our internal world. So having these things that bring us self-regulation is necessary on a daily basis. It's really a daily practice.
Should we go back to acupuncture? We need to get back into this. So yeah. Meridians, okay? These mm-hmm, are important. Mm-hmm, this mm-hmm. concept might be foreign to a lot of people listening.
Yep.
Like in Western, like Nick and I have kind of a medical background, like chiropractic is alternative, but our education is super Western. Nerves are like these communication pathways, like energy flows and brain connects to tissue and tissue, right? Mm-hmm. Now, meridians are also these channels of communication.
Correct.
Now, the argument against meridians for a long time was like, if they're in the body, we should see them.
Mm.
But what's cool now is
we can see them. Electron
we can see them now. They're observable now. Yes. We just need the better technology. But exactly. Meridians have been utilized in health in
thousands of years. Yeah. So the Indians have talked about them in terms of the nadis. And then it kind of migrated out of India into Nepal, into Tibet, into China, into Japan, into Korea. So there's all of these different modalities of acupuncture. So they say that there are like 50,000 nadis, you know, infinite number, really. And it's all of these different connective communicatory pathways in through our connective tissue and fascia.
It looks like the meridians are in our collagen.
Yes. Connective tissue. They're in our connective tissue. They're in our fascia. So there's a really beautiful electron microscope study that I saw that when you put the acupuncture needle into the tissue and you twist it a little bit, there's almost this like spiral that looks like a hurricane, if you will, or a tornado or something like that. But it's all electrochemical reactions that's occurring. And what that does is that feeds back to the brain that then feeds back to the tissue where the needle is. So even that's why like longstanding chronic pain or longstanding chronic things that haven't been healing can heal under acupuncture's influence. It's because we're reigniting, we're reawakening communication to that area. We're reawakening the inflammation response, which inflammation is healthy when it's, you know, short term. We want an inflammatory response. It's actually a healing response. So acupuncture helps to sort of reawaken, can reawaken old traumas or reawaken old injuries and help bring healing there, facilitate that. So whether it's a sprained ankle or whether it's a frozen shoulder or a herniated disc, if it's something systemic, like a migraine, like migraine phenomena that's happening, or whether it's imbalances, let's say in someone that's having like perimenopausal symptoms, hot flashes and night sweats and insomnia and things like that. These are more what we call dynamic balance issues. So we want to create more of a dynamic balance in these channels and collaterals. Chinese medicine is from China. So the way that, you know, the way that we do talk in Chinese medicine, we'll talk about, you know, a yin deficiency or a kidney yang deficiency or liver yang rising. And this is totally foreign to people. So I really try to steer clear from talking in Chinese medical language terms and try as best as possible to, you know, speak English. And there's a lot of crosstalk. You can't overlay system upon system. It just doesn't work. Some works a little bit, but acupuncture, it's all about homeostasis. We get really, I mean, like I was saying earlier when I first started talking about it, is that like our individual beings are our own little universes. With Chinese medicine, I mean, every single point has a spirit too. You know, every single point has an energetic. So if someone's suffering from, let's say someone's suffering from grief. Let's say someone has either
lung meridian.
Yeah, lung and large intestine. So metal elements. So all of our elements, we have five elements in Chinese medicine. Every element is connected to an organ, and every organ has a meridian. And so there's it gets very, very, very it's beautiful. It's a beautiful, eloquent system. But so let's say someone's going through grief. They're crying a lot. They're exercising their lungs. But then they break out in like these really weird rashes, you know, or they get constipated. They can't let go. Things like this. So the lung and large intestine become imbalanced organ-wise when someone's having an emotional experience. Acupuncture can help like soothe the lung and large intestine and enable sort of a higher processing response. And also one of the most important things, like when you were actually saying, you know, if you only had one day to treat someone, what would you do? Right. If you only had one day. And what the first thing that I thought of was I would treat the person's spirit. I would treat the person. I would treat the heart. So the heart in Chinese medicine is our emperor. It's our connected being. And so when we treat the person, everything will heal. Right? When we go straight to the core. So what's really wrong? You know, like you're telling me X, Y, Z, what's really going on? And in history taking, whether it's from a functional medicine perspective, which I do a lot of, or Chinese medicine, I want to know what was happening when these things started. You know, like when did your symptoms start? What's correlative here? What are your mitigating factors? And actually Dr. Jeffrey Bland, who's the founder of functional medicine, took his way of thinking from Chinese medicine. It's all patterns and systems-based thinking. You know, what was going on here now, and but also what's confounded the situation. So, you know, treating the heart and re-regulating the person's emotional, spiritual body can have a domino effect into resolving a lot of their symptoms.
Totally. That's hard. It's hard to do. I think unfortunately a lot of doctors, you know, they don't have the tools to necessarily do that always.
Well, in a lot of ways we don't have to do it. We're not really doing it. We're just, I mean, I don't feel of myself when I'm giving an acupuncture treatment, I consider myself a vessel. And that's basically, it's just sort of guiding that patient's energy into their own being, you know? So with, you know, if I try to connect someone to their heart center, to, you know, an element that they need to be working on, it's just taking that person on their own inner journey and experience. The healing happens within that person. I'm really not doing anything. I'm just saying like, wake up here, you know, wake up here, come here.
I tell people, no doctor has ever healed anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Only the body heals.
Yeah.
So doctors can save someone's life, right? If you're in the emergency room and you're bleeding out, they can stitch you up.
But then the body has to heal that.
But the body heals it.
Exactly.
The doctor keeps you from dying. Yes. Or the doctor or practitioner can help encourage or facilitate the environment for your body to optimize itself.
Correct. Yes.
I'm still going to keep it on my business card, though.
What's your business card say?
It doesn't say healer, but actually I like that brand more because I like the people that come into me when they see that brand.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, healer?
Healer versus doctor. Yeah.
Well, our mentor, Dr. Phillips, told me once, he's like, I'm not a healer, I'm a peeler.
That's so, I like that.
So that doesn't work well on a business card though.
No, you have to explain it.
Dr. Nick Hyde, peeler.
Peeler.
But he says what keeps people from healing is these attachments, like these ego attachments to past experiences. And so his job is like removing layer by layer till you get to someone's true self or higher self. And that self is a healing machine. It could take care of business by itself. But we just attach these things to us, like these false senses of self that interrupt. Like we talked about presenting physiology. So he's like, my job's to peel away these layers of like a false self or ego attachments.
Yeah.
So I'm not a healer.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
We have to get him back on the show, by the way. And for all of you, maybe this is your first time listening. Back in December 2018, we released a show with Dr. Phillips. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Go listen to it. We just let him talk the whole time. We didn't ask any questions.
And then what?
Yeah, keep going.
It's pretty special. All right. So meridians, though, are emotionally connected as well. So
Yes. We
want flow, right? And I consider flow to be synonymous with like communication, like your body should be communicating, which helps keep it regulatory, right? Mm-hmm. Like what's the need right now? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it.
Yep.
It's like a healthy relationship. You need communication, and like your body to be healthy, it needs to communicate properly, right? There's different ways of doing that. Nerves,
the field meridians, right? But meridians can be very affected by emotions.
They can. They definitely can. So the Chinese talk about the source or causes of disease, and some of them are external: an insect bite, a fall, a virus, you know, bacteria. That's an external cause. An internal cause are the emotions. So, so we just touched on briefly the five elements. So in Chinese medicine, we have the earth element, which kind of sits at the center. We also have the fire element, the wood element, the water element, and the metal element. So the fire element is most commonly related to joy and love.
Heart and small intestine.
Small intestine, pericardium, and something called triple warmer, or San Jiao.
Which is adrenal thyroid.
Yes, endocrine.
So pretty good student. Are.
He's good. And so that's all fire element. So in healthy, you know, and we have healthy gradients of emotions. Like anger can be valuable at times. Grief is normal at times. You know, sympathy and compassion are completely normal. But when these emotions start to get out of balance is when we start to have issues. So that the fire element, the small intestine and the heart, the small intestine is sort of like our sorter. Think about the small intestine in the digestive system. It extracts nutrients. And so our small intestine on our energetic level is extracting sort of our emotional body, sort of filtering, if you will, what's good for us and what's not good for us on an emotional level. And then our earth element is all sympathetic joy, compassion, but out of balance can be very worrying, can be very ruminating. You know, and we see a lot of these spleen stomach, which is earth organ dysfunction, metabolically. So we see a lot of this, manifest in weight issues. We see a lot of this in even like congestive heart failure, just like swelling and edema, spleen and, kind of going off. That's not going to make sense to anyone. So we'll pause there. The metal element is all large, lung and large intestine. So grief, but it's also very helpful in terms of our ability to sort of forgive and let go. And so on a healthy level, when we're operating well, our skin and our colons work to sweat things out as well as eliminate things out through
and
the
lungs
colon.
An eliminating organ too. It's,
breath. Yeah, carbon dioxide.
Toxic gases.
Exactly. And then kidney is the differentiation with kidney. A lot of time they translate it in terms of fear and will. Yeah. So fear, you know, fear-based patterning, and the opposite to kidney. Kidney is your water element. So what calms water or what warms water? Fire, love, you know, and same thing when there's too much joy. Sometimes people, you know, we talk about someone that's won the lottery and it's kind of like going like, you know, AWOL with happiness. Like they need to calm it down. They need to reel it in. Like they don't have their appropriate, you know, factors in check. There can be too much joy. You know, they just spaz out. So water element, but having like appropriate ability to discern, appropriate willfulness is kidney. And like strength, there's like a strength and courage component to kidney as well. And then what is your general, the wood element, which I'm a wood, is, all about sort of like vision, decision-making, determination, but out of balance can be frustration, imbalanced, anger, things like that, kind of going in a bad pattern. And the antidote to that is compassion. So earth supports wood, right? Earth allows trees to put roots and grow. So all of the elements and all of the emotions have their counterbalances. They're based on the natural world. And, you know, the Chinese observe these things in nature and then they observe them within our own beings. Hence the reflection.
Because we are nature.
We are nature. Yes, exactly. And it's so beautiful. And it, you know, again, some of those mindfulness practices coming back on a daily basis to self-reflection and where am I, you know, and how can I, where's my own personal antidote to this? So whether it's an acupuncture session or, you know, like Jake said, journaling or some things like this that we can figure out how to rebalance and come back to our centers where we're clear light.
Yeah. Well, selfishly, since we have you here, fire tends to come up for me a lot as okay. Imbalance. And
your own sessions or just when you treat people?
No, for my own sessions.
In your own being.
For you.
Fire. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's heart, small intestine.
So yeah, I'll have to figure out what type of fire you are.
Anchor, Nick.
What type of fire?
Well, yeah.
Well, so, small intestine's what, like abandonment, rejection? But heart is anger. And I know my bro. He's got a fire burn.
Well, so I've never met you, Nick, and I don't know your history. So it's hard to diagnose. We don't really diagnose constitutional elements or patterning based on what's happened to us in our lives. It's more, how do we operate when we're pushed up against a wall? And in balance, we are seen very strong in those emotions. Out of balance is when we, like, when we're weak, you know, when we're weak, we're out of balance.
So when you said you're saying
gallbladder wood. Okay. So there's different, there's liver woods and there's like gallbladder woods. So like there's a small intestine fire and there's a you know, heart fire.
Liver's kind of connected to unhappy. What's gallbladder?
So with gallbladder, like, so for me, when I get imbalanced, I can't make decisions. I don't know left from right. I don't know where I want to eat dinner. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And then I whirl in sort of that like inability to decide. When I'm in balance, like I was talking to my mother this morning, I have like 4 months mapped out. Like I know where I'm going. I know what I need to do. I know what I'm doing tomorrow at 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Like I'm good. But that can get too stiff and rigid, right? So wood, bamboo, I have to be flexible if something changes. I need to be able to go with the flow in that capacity. And we have elements within our elements, but
How do we find out more about that? I mean, everyone's going to want to take a personality quiz after this.
So there are some things online. I'm sure you can do some personality quizzes. The best thing to do is to seek out an acupuncturist because they get to know you. So when we work with someone or when I work with someone, and hopefully most acupuncturists do this, my intake process is about an hour, sometimes an hour and a half. That I spend with an individual. So I work with them. I use about a 30-page intake form. And it's very, very comprehensive. So it's a functional medicine intake form that also has Chinese medical information in there. And I want to know genetics. I want to know if that person was, you know, what their gestation was like, how they were delivered, if they were breastfed, when they were, you know, foods were introduced, gut. Now I want to know dental. I want to know stress. I want to know family. I want to know diet, everything. Then when I actually sit down with all of their objective information, or their subjective information, excuse me, then I get to actually listen to them. So how someone sounds, like how they speak, the way their face looks, the color of their skin, the odor that they give off, their energetics in the world, the sound of their voice is so important. It's hard to diagnose yourself. You know, we always think we're one way, and then it's like, wait a second, no way. And the thing is that we have all the elements within ourselves. So we're not just one, we're all of them. We have all of them and we manifest all of them. It's just, we have one that we gravitate towards more intensely when we're out of balance, for all of them. Yeah.
Good. My acupuncturist thinks I'm earth.
I think you're an earth. We'll see.
I took the Harry Potter test. I'm also a Hufflepuff. So I don't know that people, but
I'm a Ravenclaw. I don't know why.
I haven't taken the Harry Potter test.
I'm a Hufflepuff. I'm a big softy. Just a big mush. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who I am.
Cedric Diggory or whatever.
I don't know names of characters.
I might totally be getting that wrong. I thought he was Hufflepuff, but
he's probably. They don't really make the storylines, but they're in the background supporting the people who do.
Yeah.
Well, he needs emotional support.
I was never really into that stuff, but my sister-in-law is super into Harry Potter, and she made us go on to Pottermore.com or whatever, and it has like 10 different quizzes you could do.
You know that I'm going to be doing this later. You do know this.
Right? Yeah. You'll get your also your wand. You can test for what would be the right wand. Your Patronus spell. What animal would come up with your Patronus spell? And I think there's something else, but anyways, yeah. So I was like, I did it, and I took it really seriously, and I was like, why did I get Ravenclaw?
I didn't want that one. Because
you're ambitious, Nick, but also prone to villainy.
Oh, well, I'm not Slytherin, so as you know.
So he might be a Liverwood instead of a Yeah, but
you're just,
fire.
You know, Ravenclaw, you're just an intellectual, man.
I have to get to know
you a little more. You're just in your brain, being too smart.
I don't know about the smart part.
But you're ambitious to be smart.
I'm like
hungry for knowledge. Let's make it.
I'm like the laziest, ambitious person ever.
He's curious.
I probably am Hufflepuff, but would have gotten peer pressure to be Gryffindor by people who wanted me to be on their squash ball team or whatever they play in that world. And I'd be like, all right, well, if you want me to be Gryffindor, I'm going to do it. Because that's
actually, that sounds like Jake, yeah.
That was me. I was like on varsity sports in high school because people wanted me to be. And I'm like, okay, that's what people want. I'll do it.
I'm going to stick some more needles in Jake's heart center.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a work in progress.
We all are. We all are.
Well, all right. This is a question I would love to have you answer for all of our listeners here. And it's about acupressure points.
Mm-hmm. Marmot points or acupressure points. Yes.
I would, if there is any cool hack, acupuncture hack they could do at home right now, they're listening to this. If they could do an acupressure point right now to help them out.
Yeah.
Just to give them one little experience. Yeah.
The first thing that came to mind, I'm going to actually go with the second thing that came to mind because this is kind of fun. So women, if you're wearing earrings, take your earrings off. Men, if you're wearing earrings, take your earrings off. Basically, all you need to do is pull on the lobe of your ear. So the lobe of your ear, my left ear since I have the microphone in my right ear. The lobe of your ear is your brain. Okay, so the ear is a microcosm. So massaging the ear and massaging the lobe of the ear will actually calm the mind down. It'll actually bring us kind
of back.
That's
the Seinfeld woo-saw.
So that's a really, really good one. That's a really, really good one. You can actually use the ear to also tap into the ear taps into the vagal nerve. And
parasympathetic.
So the parasympathetic vagal nerve tone. Exactly. So working on the ear, working on the ear lobe, if you're stressed out, that's a really, really good one.
You can do that for your partner. So your partner's like being real crazy. Just be like, let me just calm down. Give him a little ear massage.
I'll give a couple other ones. The inner wrists are really good. So if you take your finger and you touch the medial side, the inside of your little baby index pinky, or not index, your pinky finger, you run it all the way to the base of the hand into the wrist. That's heart seven. That is Shen Men. Shen is spirit. Men is gate. So it's spirit gate. So when you rub and massage that point, that will also calm the mind, calm the Shen. So insomnia, things like that. LI4 is the big one they always give you for headaches, right? I always see Jake looking at his hand. Everyone talks about LI4, the migraine point.
When you do acupressure, you're saying massage is a good way of doing it.
So I actually like to think of, so from being an acupuncturist for 12 years, when I use a needle and I go into tissue, I can actually feel the chi or energetic response the patient gives me back and vice versa. So when I use my index finger and my lung and I go in, it's almost like you're like, if you could, I don't know a good word. I wish I was better with science fiction or these things, but like almost just like as if energy was coming out of the tips of your fingers. So, you know, you just feel it almost like penetrating through, like if your finger had an extension that was moving through the skin into the fascia energetically. So press, rub, move, like kind of massage, get that going in that area. And this is not acupuncture related. I'm just going to throw this in here. This is yoga. related, but Nadi Shodhana, which is alternate nostril breathing, is one of the most effective ways to access the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's alternate nostril breathing. So it realigns the different hemispheres of our brain. And Nadi Shodhana is amazing if we need to either calm down or speed up. And so usually in the yoga tradition, we take our right hand, we take our index finger, our middle finger, and press them into the palms. The thumb goes on the right nostril. The ring finger and the little finger go on the left nostril. And without taking us through an entire Nadi Shodhana meditation, closing the right nostril and just breathing in and out of the left nostril, let's say 10 or 12 times, deep, slow, regulated breathing, maybe counting to four, counting to six, and then closing the left nostril, breathing in and out of the right nostril. Same, counting to 10, 12, and alternating. The Nadi Shodhana gets into different patternings where we alternate, where we hold, but just regulating the left and right hemispheres of the brain with Nadi Shodhana is a wonderful technique to rebalance the body.
Quick shout out. My 7th grade history teacher, Mrs. Kelly Smith, I think that was her name, she had us do this before exams.
Really?
No way.
She was weird. Yeah, she totally did.
That's awesome.
Not that the exact method, because we weren't like alternating fingers, but it was just the breathing one and then the other one.
Yeah. Go with her. Cool. Yeah. She must have been a yogi.
This is.
She was probably a yogi, and she wanted her students to
bounce and behave. To the brain. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was only before exam. She'd do that and she'd pass out exams.
That's fabulous.
That's cool.
I love that. That's awesome. Yeah, that's super cool. Go her.
Yeah, that's awesome. Probably pair it with some aromatherapy too. Should be nice. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Essential oils weren't readily available 20 something years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. But calming the nervous system down is important. So I'll even have patients that can't sleep if they wake up in the middle of the night. I mean, obviously they'll be on protocols, they'll be on new herbs and, you know, but I'm like, just do some Nadi Shodhana. Don't get on your phone. Don't turn on the television.
Goodness.
Don't ever.
Do not.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Like Nick does. I know you get on your phone, Nick, middle of the night.
My phone's not even on.
Gotta check your tweets.
We've been explicit that I do have a Twitter, but no one's allowed to follow me on there.
Also, we have a running joke, but it's true. We have an Instagram as a podcast. Neither one of us knows how to log into it. We have one.
Yeah. And you know what? Everyone's expected to participate on that. Everyone is expected to participate with that Cultivated Being podcast Instagram handle. Even if it doesn't matter if Jake and I can't sign on, do you guys care about the podcast or not?
You have to like it. You have to follow it.
Tag us and stuff.
Yeah.
Do your weird breathing. You tag us in your story.
Tell us how you shouldn't have worked for you and all that cilantro.
Yeah. Eat some soap. See how you feel about it.
I will say we had the Mother's Day. It was Mother's Day, and all of my nieces and nephews played a prank. They cut up a bar of soap and put it on the cheese plate.
Oh dear.
And like a bunch of people had it, and they're like, "What kind of cheese
was that? At least natural soap." Oh, it was pretty natural.
It looked like cheese. It totally did. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, you know, my wife's grandmother's 101 years old. I'm pretty sure she had it and was like, I've had better cheese, but it's not bad. Like,
someone put cilantro in this cheese.
I'll be just fine.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, good times.
This has been a podcast. I think we should probably wrap. We can have Catherine back. She's got a world of knowledge. So
she does. It was such a pleasure to talk with you.
It was a pleasure to talk with you as well, Nick.
Thank you for dropping so much.
I'm here too, guys.
I mean, yeah. Nick.
Thanks. Thanks for dropping some major knowledge for our many fans out there.
Hot and spicy health tips.
I like it.
All right. Well,
peace. You are what you eat.
Mm-hmm. Peace to both of you and... All right. Have a good
you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Too, man. Followers, reach out to us. Cultivatedbeing@gmail.
Yes.
Cultivatedbeing@gmail. Me personally at Dr. Jake Hyde. That's drjakehyde.com. And Nick, Inside Out Health
everywhere you Google that. It's the first thing that comes up.
Yeah. Actually, I looked at my Google Analytics. They just email me. Google will email me my analytics. Mm-hmm. And I got 800 searches for my website came up number one. And I was like, whoa, that's a huge number for me. And so I looked, and it's because everyone was searching for In-N-Out, like In-N-Out, the burger place, right? But we don't have one in Santa Cruz.
So you came up.
So I came up 800 times.
Nick, you should change your business name to In-N-Out.
In-N-Out
Healing. Well, it's fast service. It's friendly.
Delicious.
Yeah. It's delicious.
It's delicious. Health.
And it's way better for you.
That's
debatable.
Yeah. I'm working at it. But anyways, it was great talking with you both. And
likewise.
Peace. Have good weeks, weekends. Yeah. It's hard to say that on the show because everyone listens at a different time. But yeah.
Love everybody. Nick, see you later. Thanks, okay. Catherine.
Namaste. Thank you. Bye.